Brunner emerged from the inn. The bounty hunter considered the peasants and the merchantmen rushing about the muddy street. It was a habit of his to study every face, each person he encountered, for some trait that he might recognize. It was the telltale mark that would put a name to the face and transform the person from just another member of the mob to a piece of merchandise to be acquired and sold. After a moment, the bounty hunter moved on, stalking down the muddy lane towards the stables where his animals had been taken. He did not trust any hand but his own with his horses, the magnificent Bretonian bay, Fiend, and the dour, overworked pack-horse from Tylea he called Paychest. It was the bounty hunter's routine to inspect the animals daily and to ensure that those he entrusted with them had not abused that trust or his property. The bounty hunter had very high expectations for his animals, and woe betide the stable master whose care was negligent. As the bounty hunter turned from the inn, he did not see the barrel-chested, scar-faced shape detach itself from an alley and follow him. The scar-faced man had traded the loincloth of the pit for a set of leather breeches and a sleeveless black tunic that displayed his massive arms. The short sword that had done such deadly work the night before swung from his belt, and the look in his close-set eyes was no less murderous than that with which he had favored his inhuman adversaries. The bounty hunter entered the darkened stable, the odor of animals and dung wafting from the cave-like gloom. He marched across the straw-strewn floor, paying scant notice to the grizzled stable-master until he was just a few feet away. Brunner addressed a few cold words to the man, inquiring where his animals could be found. The dirty man pointed a brown-stained hand deeper into the building and shambled off to return to whatever duties Brunner's arrival had interrupted. Brunner found his steed and pack-horse tethered to a wooden post set into the wall, forming a stall that separated the animals from their fellows. The massive Bretonian bay snorted happily as the bounty hunter's gloved hand stroked his flank. Brunner examined the animal's body, looking for the telltale signs of lash and whip. Then he examined each of the horse's hooves, checking that the shoes had been replaced and the horn tended to. Satisfied with his examination, he moved toward the gray pack-horse. As he rose, however, the bounty hunter noticed the figure of the stable-master slipping out of the front door. A premonition washed over Brunner, and he turned just as a massive figure closed upon him. Brunner caught the wrist of the hand that gripped the short sword just as the scar-faced man was thrusting the blade towards his belly. The bulging muscles on the pit-fighter's massive arms were like steel cords, and before the man's strength, the bounty hunter found his own restraining grip thwarted, the fat-bladed sword inching closer towards his vitals. The bounty hunter twisted his body, catching the pit-fighter off guard. The gladiator's massive body now pressed against Brunner's back, the short sword thrust away from the bounty hunter's belly. The gladiator snarled, catching Brunner's neck in the crook of his free arm. Like the legendary pythons of Lustria, his powerful arm began to constrict about the bounty hunter's throat, choking the breath out of him. Brunner released a hand from the pit-fighter's wrist to rake the man's eyes, but swiftly returned his hand to the wrist as the sword began to turn back towards his body. The gladiator grunted and increased the pressure about the bounty hunter's neck. The contest continued for a long time, the man's feet jostling in the straw and dung for greater advantage or some purchase that might tip the balance. Finally, the bounty hunter went limp, his grasp on the sword slackened. The gladiator sneered and increased pressure on the throat. But the bounty hunter's head suddenly snapped backwards, exploding the pit-fighter's bulbous nose with the steel crown of his helmet. The killer released his prey, staggering back a pace. Brunner gasped for breath, but even as he sucked air into his starving lungs, he managed to smash his steel-toed boot into the stunned gladiator's knee. The scarred man crumpled, and as he rose, A second kick caught him under the chin. Teeth and blood scattered across the stable, adding to the agitation of the animals. Brunner stood over the man and watched the rise and fall of his massive chest. As his icy eyes narrowed, the bounty hunter smashed the toe of his other boot into the side of the gladiator's head. There was a sickening sound like an egg cracking, and the pit fighter's body trembled. Again the boot kicked out, this time caving in the side of his foe's skull. The rise and fall of the man's chest eventually grew still. The bounty hunter crouched, sucking in more precious air, one gloved hand massaging his ravaged throat. He was studying his prey, taking in the build, the scars, and what remained of his face. A smile, like that of a wolf as it spies a lone sheep, spread across the bounty hunter's face. There was something familiar about this one. The gloved hand left his throat and grasped the hilt of the long knife hanging from his belt. The bounty hunter made his way back towards the inn, every eye on the street watching as he walked past with the dripping head of the gladiator swinging from his left hand, where he gripped it by the hair. As he neared the inn, the wiry shape of a young boy detached itself from the shade of a haycart and scrambled towards him, straining to make his small legs keep pace with Brunner's lengthy stride.
"Will you be needing more salt, master?" the boy asked, a tone of eagerness in his voice. Even at this tender age he had witnessed death often enough, and heads of criminals adorning pikes set before the town's main gate were commonplace. The gory object in Brunner's hand disturbed him less than the gaggle of flies buzzing about a nearby pile of dung. Brunner paused, staring down at the boy. The young face stared back at the steel visage.
"Ever seen him before?"
the bounty hunter asked, holding the pit fighter's mashed face forward for the boy to get a better look.
"No," he replied after a moment. "I am sure that he was a stranger from outside Greymere."
Brunner continued to stare at the boy, then reached into a cloth pouch on his belt and tossed the child a copper coin.
"Let me know if you see any more strangers,"
the bounty hunter's cold voice said. Without a further look at the boy, he proceeded on his way to the inn. The bounty hunter was deep in thought as he pushed open the locked door of the inn. Since he arrived here, two men had tried to kill him. The duelist Savio had been known here, but the brutish man who had ambushed him in the stable apparently was not, assuming the boy and the stable master were to be trusted. Brunner did not doubt that there would be a third attempt. Drexler bolted down the glass of Italian brandy, as if it were cheap marsh brew from the inn. He cast a withering look at the attending servant, and the man hastened to refill his glass. The door of the parlor opened, and the exiled imperial nobleman turned his head, his hand slipping away from the glass, to fumble for the crossbow leaning beside his chair. He breathed a sigh of relief as he saw Vincenzo enter, and the ashen pallor faded slightly from his face.
"I have not left this room in 2 days,"
the merchant growled, fear making the sullen tone more whiny than intimidating.
"He killed the pit fighter."
To punctuate his last statement, Drexler drained a glass of brandy. Vincenzo nodded his head, removing his cloth hat, with a hand gray with trail dust.
"I could have told you that would turn out like that. You hired a killer to do an assassin's job."
"I encouraged the prince to arrest the man," Drexler said, looking down at the floor. "He would have done so had the bounty hunter not already appeared before him. It seemed this pit fighter was once a Sartosan corsair, with a price on his head in every port in Tylia."
Drexler sighed, waving his hands in an expressive gesture.
"If it had been the bounty killer's word alone, perhaps I might have prevailed upon Valdemar to arrest him, but the pit fighter's manager came forward to affirm the hunter's claim." Damn fool was hoping to share in the reward and gain some last bit of profit on his fighter.
Drexler shook his head. Ordinarily, he would have admired such limitless avarice and the ability to ferret out the last copper from an investment, but this time, boundless greed had worked against him. Suddenly, Drexler raised his head and turned to face his Tylean friend.
"What did you say a moment ago?"
he inquired, a subtle tone to his query.
"I made contact with Lewis," Vincenzo replied. "He will arrive in 2 days' time."
Drexler shook his head, waving away his words.
"No, you said something about this being an assassin's job,"
he said, a sinister gleam in his eye. He thought for a moment, motioning for Vincenzo to be silent. A smile cracked his face and he nodded.
"Perhaps we do not need to wait 2 days."
"What are you planning?"
Vincenzo asked, not following the merchant's thoughts.
"Drugo,"
the exile said, his smile widening as he saw the frightened look in Vincenzo's eyes.
"Drugo?"
he scoffed.
"Prince Valdemar will never stand for that. You may as well send for Vogan, and have him do the job, and smash down half the town in the process."
The Tylean shook his head.
"Besides, Drugo is locked away in the prince's dungeon, to entertain us all on Fulgzeit, when he is drawn and quartered."
The calculating look remained on Drexler's face, as he stood from his chair.
"I am very old friends with Valdemar. I think you will find that it is easier to catch an assassin like Drugo than it is to keep him."
He laughed, snatching the bottle of brandy from his attendant and pouring a measure into his glass.
"At least he will, after I finish speaking with him about it." "The bounty hunter considers killing a business,"
Drexler snickered.
"Let us see how he fares against someone who considers it a religious experience."
A figure of blackness washed from the shadows beside a ramshackle wainwrights as the last light on the upper floor of Greymere's Inn went dark. The face grinned in the darkness as widely and hideously as any goblin from the Badlands. No laughter accompanied the manic leer as the shape detached itself from the wall against which it had been pressed. A shadow crossed the muddy street. It had the faintest suggestion of a man's figure, cloaked and hooded in a garment cut from midnight itself. It crossed the street, fading into the looming darkness before the inn. No sound accompanied it, not the sound of breath, the squelching of mud under booted sole, or even the rustle of fabric. The heavy door of the inn, firmly secured from within, was covered by darkness for one fleeting moment. Then it opened by the smallest margin. The shadow slipped through the opening, and the heavy door shut behind it. Drugo replaced the bar his thin, wire-like hook had lifted, and scanned the silent building. A dog lying near the door did not even raise its head as the assassin stalked past. The man grinned down at the animal, fingering a dagger clutched in his hand. It had been 2 weeks since he had slaughtered anything, and the last blood he had drawn had been from his jailer when he bit off his fingers as he spooned food into his mouth. The assassin's tongue darted out, licking his chin and cheeks, as if to recall the taste. The man leaned towards the dog, a murderous urge rising within him. But the moment passed, and he turned away, gliding up the narrow stairway that led to the rooms of the inn. He had been forced to swear oaths before the grey-moustached man had released him. Oaths to his patron god, Cain, the lord of murder. The only oaths he would honour, and the man had known it. He had sworn to leave Greymere, sworn never to return, sworn to kill no more of its citizens. With one exception, the bounty hunter. Drugo knew that his prey would be found up here, in one of the private rooms. It was to be expected. Poor men never warranted a sanction, never rated the expense of hiring a killer. Gold given for the services of an assassin of Cain was sacred, and only a large amount was acceptable. For who would dishonor a god by offering up a pittance? Drexler had been most upset at Drugo's insistence that his freedom was not enough, and still more upset when he heard the price. But he had paid, in the end. When the fear set upon them, they always paid. The assassin glided down the hall, his approach so stealthy that a rat scurried past him along the opposite wall without turning a whisker in his direction. He reached the first door on his left and paused a moment to defeat the lock. He pushed the door open by the slightest of cracks, then closed it again, the brief intrusion unnoticed by those within. The fat man had certainly not been a bounty hunter, his companion even less. The assassin glided away, passing from one door to another, pausing at each, before moving on. Finally, he reached the room he sought. There, on a battered table, rested the helmet he had had described to him by the merchant. There was a body in the bed, the heavy blankets pulled about it to guard against the chill of the night. Drugo's blood surged and pounded through his veins. He shut the door behind him and silently moved to the bed. At last, his breath came hot and hard to him, the killing frenzy seething through his body. It had been far too long since he had made an offering to Lord Cain. The assassin's dagger slashed downwards, into the blanket, into the spot where Drugo judged the neck to be. It was a killing blow, but the frenzy was upon him, and the blade struck the blankets again and again. The grinning leer became still more wicked and depraved, the gleam of madness still more maniacal as his dagger rose and fell, rose and fell. Then the smile died, the gleam faded. The assassin's hand reached out, tearing away the blankets. He watched as feathers slowly flew from the butchered pillows. Feathers, but no blood. Pillows, but no body upon them. The assassin leaned forward, unable to believe his eyes. There was a loud explosive sound, and the assassin fell backwards, half his face turned into a charred, gory mess. Flecks of black powder sizzled in his flesh as his blood dribbled into the floorboards and leaked down to the tavern below. The bed creaked as a form emerged from beneath it. Brunner lit the lamp beside his helm. The smoking gun was clenched in his hand, mirroring the smoke rising from where he had fired through the raised pallet that served as a mattress. He lit a cigar on the lamp, and as the dark smoke rose from the stubby tube of dried weeds, he bent over the dead man to examine what was left of his face. There was a din and clamor in the hall outside, and a frenzied battering at the door of his room. The bounty hunter stalked over to the door, opening it, staring into the bold visage of the innkeeper. "Just an uninvited guest. Maybe you know him," he said, motioning to the innkeeper to enter and look at the man he had just killed. The man gave a gasp as he recognized the carcass.
That's Drugo," he exclaimed. "Occultist of Cain. But he's supposed to be locked up in the prince's dungeon."
The man did not protest, as Brunner gripped his arm and led him back toward the door, where the faces of the rest of the staff and guests peered in.
"Then he might be somewhat appreciative when I return Drugo to his custody in the morning."
Brunner started to close the door.
"My sheets!"
the innkeeper shouted, suddenly realizing what else he had seen in the room.
"Yes, I'll need a new set,"
the bounty hunter said.
"But you can give them to me in the morning."
With that, he shut the door in the face of the innkeeper and those behind him. Brunner walked across the floor, back toward his bed. He reloaded his firearm, then, cradling the weapon against his chest, slipped under the pallet, letting the sheets once again drape over the edge. The bounty hunter was not unused to hardship, with many months spent every year hunting things that were almost men, and men who were barely human. A soft bed, even a not-so-soft bed, was now too strange to enjoy. And besides, there was always a jackal ready to murder a person in his sleep. It was always best to give him a tempting target, but never the right one. The bald man, with a grotesque paunch, reached to the shelf behind him and twisted a tap on the cask of beer. The light, urine-hued liquid sloshed into the clay stein. The man set a stein down upon the counter of the bar with such violence that the white-topped brew rolled over the sides of the cup.
"Careful!" The cold voice of the man on the other side of the counter admonished the bold bartender. "You are spilling my drink."
The innkeeper turned on the bounty hunter, an angry look on his face.
"You can have this one at my expense, just so long as you do not spend another night under my roof," the man exclaimed. "Half of my guests left in the morning, and the other half have demanded I reduce their bills, all because of you and that visitor of yours last night."
Brunner regarded the man with a face that was as expressionless as the steel mask of his helm.
"You would think that I had not done your community a great service this past night," the bounty hunter said. "Kept you all from being murdered in your beds, as I nearly was."
"As you should have been,"
the bold man retorted.
"Beds are meant to be slept on, not be crawled under. What kind of place do you think I'm running here?"
"I am glad that your prince was more appreciative." The bounty hunter's voice warmed as his hand caressed the slight bulge in the breast of his tunic. 20 gold crowns is not my best work, but then my commissions are seldom so obliging as to come to my room looking for me." Brunner looked over as the tavern door opened, one hand slipping to a throwing knife, grasping its hilt. The bounty hunter relaxed slightly as he saw the salt boy enter. The boy caught the man's eye and ran over.
"I saw another stranger, like you asked about," the boy said, "riding into town."
Brunner dug a silver piece from his belt, holding it in his upraised hand where the boy could see it.
"Now," the bounty hunter said, "describe this stranger to me."
He looked over his shoulder at the innkeeper.
"And I may be wanting to use that back door you spoke of earlier."
The slender man rode his white horse through the muddy streets, stopping well short of the inn that was the first place of interest to visitors to Greymere. He was a young man, his brown hair worn short in the rounded bowl pattern of a Bretonian peasant, but a suit of well-tended leather armor that clothed him, the metal boots, the slender blade at his side, the hard set of his features, these belonged to no peasant. The man slipped down from the saddle of his steed, tethering the animal to a post. He stared up at the high wooden tower of the building beside him, then glanced back down the street, his hawk-like gaze training on the door of the inn. He turned, removing a long curved length of wood from the saddle of his steed. The man carried the length of wood with him as he walked into the building. There was no one about in the little timber temple to the goddess Myrmidia, as he had hoped. The Bretonian paused and drew a long cord from his belt that he fixed to one end of the haft of wood. He studied the wooden shaft, admiring the grain of its surface, the shape of its cut, the intricate carved runes and script that flowed along its length, too precise, too artful to be any man-made construction. Straining, the Bretonian bent the shaft of wood into a bow shape that transformed it from a length of wood into a deadly weapon. The string, made of the hair of elf maidens, woven together with consummate skill and craft, was made fast at the other end of the bow. Lewis had dwelled long in his homeland, with his family, on the very edge of the Lauren Forest. They had known the forest folk as few men did, and the bow had been gifted to his father by one of the wood elves. It was that bow that had cost his father his life, when their knightly liege had demanded the weapon claiming that such a bow was unfit for peasant hands. Louis smiled, recalling how the knight had died, drowning in his own blood, how he had reclaimed his father's bow, and how he had made the armored lords of Bretonnia pay for their cruelty and oppression. At last, the feared archer known as the Black Feather, after the crow feathers he adorned his arrows with, had been forced to leave his homeland, to range far across the known world to escape the vengeful grasp of the king. Louis walked over to the simple ladder that would take him into the tower. Now he was an assassin for hire, employing his skill and the elegant weapon he bore for the crude pursuit of gold. But some day he would return to Bretonnia, and cause his former masters to again fear the forests, to fear the death that struck from afar without warning. The marksman made his way into the small stand atop the tower, and crouched down onto his belly. He pulled a black feathered arrow from the quiver at his side, putting it to the string of the bow. He sighted down the street, fixing his gaze on the door of the tavern. He stretched the arrow back, keeping the string taut and the sight of the door of the inn. When the bounty hunter came out, he would never see the arrow that pierced his heart. Long hours passed, the sun lowered in the sky. Still, the Bretonnian kept his arrow nocked, ignoring the strain of his muscles and the tension and fatigue setting into his limbs. Louis waited, still as a statue. Eventually, the bounty hunter would emerge. Then he would die.
"Intent on holding that thing back all night?" a cold voice asked from behind the Bretonnian.
The stillness of the archer seemed to actually increase. Louis turned his head slightly, seeing a black boot at the edge of his vision, resting on the edge of the sloped roof.
"Wondering how long I've been here?" the bounty hunter asked. "Almost as long as you, waiting for you to make a move."
There was a steel edge in Brunner's voice.
"I finally got tired of waiting."
The Bretonnian didn't move, as the man he had been hired to kill spoke, as his sword touched the small of his back.
"When I learned that a stranger had ridden in, alone, sporting a fancy bow, I reasoned it out, that you were here to kill me, that you would be up here, the highest ground in this mud hole. I would be here, too, if I were going to put an arrow in somebody before they could do something about it."
The Bretonnian craned his neck around to glare at the bounty hunter. Brunner stared back, his face unreadable in the dark.
"Don't even think about it," the bounty hunter said. "You move a muscle and you're dead. And I'm sure you'd rather have your bones rest back in Bretonnia, Louis."
The use of his name enraged the former peasant. The tone of the bounty hunter's voice echoed his former lord's. With a snarl, the archer turned, gasping as Brunner's sword stabbed into his side. The elegant bow slipped from the archer's shocked fingers, toppling back down the dark pit of the tower. Louis clutched his side, blood seeping between his fingers.
"No," the bounty hunter's chill voice spoke again. "What I want to know is who paid you to kill me."
The words dripped with a promise of death if they were not obeyed. Again, Louis heard the echo of the knight's voice as he demanded his father's bow. Louis's hand flew to the hilt of his sword. Brunner lashed out with his foot, kicking the man in the chest. A strangled scream howled from the Bretonnian's lips as he was pushed from the tower. The bounty hunter heard a dull thud of the man's body in the mud far below. He peered over the edge of the tower at the body down in the street, its limbs skewed about it in unnatural, broken angles. He shook his head.
"Well, at least your head will make it back to Bretonnia," he said, caressing the hilt of the long knife at his belt.